In the studios of WLW in Cincinnati, Procter & Gamble, the makers of Oxydol, agreed to sponsor the program for a trial run of 16 weeks. By the time those 16 weeks were over, listener response was tremendous, and the sales of Oxydol were climbing to new heights. Ma Perkins became a part of our radio way of life. The show moved to Chicago, and for 13 years it was one of the highest-rated daytime dramas on radio. In the late 40s, the program moved to New York, where it originated for another 12 years before leaving the air in 1960. How well I remember listening to Ma Perkins when I was a kid. 12:15 in Chicago was on, I think, Life Can Be Beautiful was on at 12 o'clock with Papa David and Chi-Chi and all of those people on there. And 12:15, Ma Perkins came on. And I had soup and a sandwich with Ma Perkins. And my mother had Oxydol's own. Doing with the wash machine and the whole bit. Well, we have some very interesting people in our studio today. And incidentally, we've set up our studio just the way the studios used to be set up 25 years ago in the good old days of the golden age of radio. We have the microphones that you remember seeing, that you've seen in all of the old, in the pictures of all of those on-the-air broadcasts, too. And we've had a few photographs taken. We're going to take a few more. Maybe in the next program guide that we come out with, we'll have a couple of pictures for all of you out there in radio land to see. But I would like to introduce to you some of the people who are in our studio this afternoon. We have a familiar voice to listeners of WLTD's Those Were the Days, because this gal has been our guest a couple of times, reminiscing about the good old radio. Rita Ascott-Boyd.
How do you do, Chuck?
Welcome.
It's fun to be here.
That the mic just right for you,
side-wise? I hope so. I think so.
You played Ma's daughter,
Faye,
for how long?
Well, all told, I think about 15, 16 years.
Almost the whole time it was in Chicago?
Almost the whole time it was
in
Chicago.
Didn't you...
Then I flew to New York when the show was being broadcast or transferred to New York. Then I commuted weekly for 3 years. And we did our show 5 times a week there, and then I'd come home on the weekends.
See, and now she's here on the weekend, and she's doing Ma Perkins.
Another weekend. I forgot about that.
You are the editor of This Week in Chicago.
Right.
And so she's right on top of things today as far as what's happening in Chicago.
Every week, that's right.
Great. Well, we're glad that you took some time from your busy schedule to be with us today.
This was a treat.
These people have been rehearsing for, 4 or 5 days now, haven't you? Been going over this thing?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Isn't it funny how time flies?
Yeah. Rita, you played Faye on the Ma Perkins show. Who are you going to play on our broadcast today?
Faye.
Okay.
Same one. The same girl.
That's longevity in a job,
believe me, yes.
Viola Berwick is a lady who spent nearly 20 years in local and network radio in the... I have a note that says in the vintage years, Viola, but I don't want to say in the vintage
years. Like good wine, you know, a good actor
exactly.
In a good vintage year. I think that's kind of a compliment.
Well, you played on the show, Ma Perkins, a number of times. Can you recall any of the characters that you played?
No, I was, there were a group of us that did the commercials, and so we called ourselves the P&G Girls. And then on occasion, maybe I was a neighbor or somebody in the waiting room at the depot. But I never played a running part on Ma Perkins. But I did do the running commercials, and they were lovely.
Well, you're going to have a chance to be on one of the dramas now as we set
up
our recreation. Listen, I wanted to mention that maybe our listeners may recall your voice from as a familiar one if they used to listen to the Breakfast Club program. Weren't you involved in that for some time?
Oh, my dear, yes. I was, I suppose it's all right to say this, isn't it? Suppose I'll disillusion anybody? I doubt it. I was Martha Logan of the Breakfast Club for about 7 years. I told recipes and always kept telling the ladies how to separate the bacon.
How do you?
Just put it out in the room for about 30 seconds. It'll separate itself.
Well, now we also have Those Were the Days cooking school today. Thank you, Martha. Viola, whom will you be on our program today?
The culmination of a desire or something. I'm doing Ma Perkins.
Today, you're
today.
From the Oxydol commercial,
yes,
from the P&G
yes,
Girls
yes,
to Ma
how,
Perkins.
See how I have risen in the world? I'm going to do Ma Perkins.
Great. Johnny Coons is with us.
Hello.
Where are you, Johnny?
Well, I'm... had to wind my way through the crowd there. Hi, Chet.
Johnny was... gee whiz, how many people grew up with Uncle Johnny Coons on television?
Well, I think quite a few. I was very interested in you talking about Oxydol a minute ago, and you said your mother had Oxydol sandwiches?
No, no. No, we had Procter & Gamble sandwiches.
Yeah. We grew up on peanut butter and milk on my show, which was on for about 8 years.
Oh, yeah.
Those were great times.
And before that, you were involved on a lot of the kids' shows.
Oh, yes. I played Chuck on Captain Midnight for about 3 years, and I played I was the original Clipper on Sky King for 5 years. And all the serials, I worked in all of them, usually played juveniles, and also characters. As a matter of fact, one of my the first time I worked Ma Perkins was as a character actor. I played a little...
A Brown County professor. He talked like that. He was very pedantic.
All right.
Chuck, would you ask Johnny to do one of the things that, with which I worked with Johnny, a hustle bubble. I'm sure he can still do it.
Oh, that's boy. Director Phil Fleming. All right, give us a hustle bubble.
Yeah, you see, in these Oxydol commercials for about 2 years, and it did run for 2 years, and there were about 6 shows that Oxydol had commercials on, and they had the hustle bubble suds, so they decided to bring the hustle bubbles to life. And it was probably one of the first irritating commercials. And it was designed that way, and man, it was irritating. I'm liable to blow this mic right off the floor here. Let's see.
Oxydol, it was white without bleaching. Wowie!
There he is. Sorry, kids, that was your Uncle Johnny Coons. Today, you're a successful businessman in the world of advertising.
Well, I'm still in the same business, so I still work as talent, and I work as a producer, and I'm also sales manager for Shield Productions and Streeterville Recording Studios with two gentlemen, Mr. Dolan, Jim Dolan, and Marty Rubenstein, the two main partners, and we have a going business, and I keep my hand in as talent. I still work as talent, doing all sorts of things.
Good. Well, as a matter of fact, you have, your Shield Productions had produced a good commercial that the listeners of this program are very partial to. It's a Buick thing.
Oh, the Buick Opal. Yes, we did
the
Buick
commercials, folks, where they say, "Well, now wait a minute. Who was the Green Hornets? What was his real name or something like that?" You've heard.
We did this whole series. It's very popular, and we're very proud of it.
Tell me about the flub on that, will you?
Yes. Let's see. It was
Mr. Keene.
Mr. Keene, missing persons, and on the original commercial, he had a sidekick, and the idea in the script was, what was Mr. Keene missing persons sidekick, Irish sidekick, and so we had a voice that came in and said, at the very end, Mike Riley. The Irish sidekick's name was Mike Riley. Only it wasn't Mike Riley, it was Mike Clancy. Well, we got phone calls like mad. They went on the air that way, and we knew it was going to get phone calls. And they still left it on the air for about 2 weeks to see how many they would get. But it was very interesting.
We know.
Yeah.
Well, Johnny, good. Who are you going to be on our program today?
Well, I'm going to play a small part here of Shuffle Schober, who was a very dear friend of mine, Charlie Eggleston, and then I'm also going to do the Senator.
The senator.
The senator.
All right. There you're going to get that voice from the hustle bubble down to the...
I sincerely hope so.
Portly senator. Well, stepping out of this week's TV Guide magazine and into our hearts is Bob Kennedy, the host of the highly successful and most popular morning show on Channel 7, Kennedy and Company.
Thank you, Chuck, and thank you very, very much for inviting me here today, because this, to me, is a great kick and a great honor to be working with all these magnificent people. I said earlier, I feel kind of like Tiny Tim about to sing at the Met. Because what these people can do with a script we've been rehearsing, we were rehearsing, we're off in the office down the hall rehearsing, and the subtleties that they can get into a line of copy, I'm going to try.
What do you think? Phil Bowman, come on in over here. You're going to be the gentleman who is directing this cast. And you actually directed Ma Perkins for how long?
About 3.5 years, until the last 3.5 years they were in Chicago. And may I say at this point that Bob grabbed onto this thing beautifully, and I think you'll all enjoy that.
He keeps waving now. Down, boy! I start, hello, everybody, down, easy, son. This is, acting and from the heart.
You keep wanting to say, good morning, it's 7:02
right,
or something.
Right.
Like. Well, we're glad that all of you are here. And Phil, I wanted to ask, when were you the director of Ma Perkins? At what period in the history of the show?
Well, it went to I think it went to New York in 47, didn't it, Rita?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was director from somewhere around 44.
You were 44, 45,
yeah,
in there.
In,
right,
in through there.
So we have one of the original Ma Perkins directors, one of the original Ma Perkins cast members. We have two others who were at one time or another involved with the Ma Perkins program when it was on the air. And we have a fellow who followed Ma Perkins on radio, Mr. Bob Kennedy. Right? What happened
that,
about that?
You know, I was wondering, who's he? There's not enough in the studio. No, that is right. I worked for a while in Albany where I was a morning disc jockey. And when Ma Perkins went off the air, Rita, they needed someone to fill in the afternoon. So the boss said to me, could you do a couple of hours in the afternoon until we get somebody to replace you? And I went on the radio, so all those nice people out there assumed that I, at least in Albany, had pushed Ma Perkins off the air. And I got hate mail and little Bob Kennedy dolls with pins stuck in them and letters from these sweet people who were watching Ma Perkins, but they weren't so sweet when they sat down to write letters. So I say, at least in Albany, New York, I tried to replace Ma Perkins.
Oh, isn't that so?
Not successfully. Not at all.
Well, we'll see if we can replace Ma Perkins this afternoon. We're going to... one other thing. Phil Bowman is going to double as our director and as the announcer on this program. So you're really
trying
getting...
to take the place of Dick Wells, who was such a great Dick announcer
Wells
over the years. You know.
Now, there is one thing we want to point out about this, and everybody here asked me to make certain that we mention it. We all love the good old days of radio. Some of the people here were most fortunate to be a part of it. Others just remember it as listeners, and a few others just love it because we love good old radio. The script that we're going to do came out of Rita Ascott Boyd's trunk of memories, and it's actually dated January 2nd of 1941. And these people have been rehearsing this straight. It's a loving recreation. We're going to have, hear it exactly, hopefully, as the listeners heard it in the good old days of radio, perhaps.
That's right. So many times you hear recreations of some of these things, and people kid these parts. And that was, I believe, one of the reasons that when things left Chicago, when the soap operas left Chicago and went to either coast, suddenly they flopped because people didn't understand. We know these were sentimental things, but they meant a lot to a lot of people. And mm-hmm. we played them just as sincerely as we could. And I think that accounted for their success. And we're going to do the same thing today.
Well, this is it. We're ready to go. I want to tell you that my name is Chuck Shaden. This is our Those Were the Days Saturday afternoon get-together on WLTD. And here's a word from Northwest Federal Savings.
Whoa, whoa, big fella! Scout. Well, Pronto, here we are at the Northwest Federal Silver Mine.
Heap plenty silver here for making loans.
Right, Pronto. Wait. What's that?
Sound like footsteps.
Yes. Look, it's a man. Let's see what he wants.
What you want? Huh? Oh, pardon me. I must be lost. I'm new out here. I just agreed to buy that ranch down the road a piece.
I see. Have you arranged for financing yet?
Huh? Oh, well, no. I really don't know how to go about it.
Here, take this silver bullet. On it is inscribed the name of Northwest Chicagoland's leading financial institution.
Hmm? Northwest Federal Savings.
That's right. And now that you've found the ranch you'd like to make your home, why don't you mosey on over to Northwest Federal at 4901 Irving Park Road, just west of Cicero?
Or call Spring 7200.
They'll send out their faithful companion for a prompt appraisal of your ranch. And in a couple of days, you'll have the best loan quotation in town, with no obligation.
That right, Kimosabe. Say, that's great. Northwest Federal Savings, huh? Wow, I'm glad I happened along here. Well, thanks, Mr. Hey, where'd he go? He's gone, and I wanted to thank him. Well, who is he, anyway?
Him, Lone Ranger.
We've got silver to lend away!
At 1590, Cummings Communications Corporation, this is Radio Limited. WLTD, Evanston.
Here she is, Oxydol's own Ma Perkins. Say, did you ever stop to figure, is the laundry soap you're using economical? Oh, I don't mean just inexpensive to buy. That's not always a sign of economy, because sometimes a laundry soap may cost you more in clothes than necessary. I mean, when washable colored clothes get so drab and scrubbed out looking, they're hardly fit to wear. Now, you know that's not economical. Not when you have to keep buying new clothes all the time. So that's why you should insist on Oxydol, because Oxydol is a safe, economical laundry soap. And when I say safe, I mean safe for washable colors, washable fabrics, and for your hands. Just to show you how safe Oxydol is, we gave cotton prints the equivalent of more than a full year's washing in Oxydol suds without a perceptible sign of wash day fade. What's more, with Oxydol, you can save your clothes, too. Save them from a lot of that wash day wear and tear that can put them in the rag bag long before their time. Because, you know, there's no hard scrubbing or boiling with Oxydol. No harsh scrub boards to wear your clothes thin. Instead, just an easy 10-minute soaking. A few quick rubs on the dirty spots, a good douse, and a rinse. Why, clothes washed in Oxydol last as much as 2 to 3 times longer from the standpoint of wash day wear and tear than clothes washed with old-style scrub boil methods. Yes, Oxydol saves your clothes. Thus, you'll find it saves you money, too. So, for sparkling, clean, economical washes, get Oxydol. And say, Oxydol's selling at the lowest prices in years right now. And now, for Ma Perkins. Well, when the 31st of December dawned, it was Faye Perkins' wedding day. But at sunset, it was Faye's wedding day no longer. Ma's other daughter, Evie, refused to come to the wedding because she thinks that Ma is against that new factory which is supposed to bring so much prosperity to everyone. And she spread the word through town that Ma was talking against the factory. When Ma's neighbors heard that, they decided that Ma is no longer their friend. And so when the wedding party got to the church, they found it empty. Well, Faye and Paul have decided that under the circumstances, the wedding must be postponed. Faye can't leave while Ma is so grief-stricken, and Paul doesn't want his honeymoon clouded. We resume our story, still on that fatal afternoon. Faye and Paul, still in their wedding raiment, are in the vestry room of the church where we left them yesterday. Listen.
Come on, Faye. Only remember, we must act cheerful for Ma. We won't let her see that we feel badly. Otherwise, Ma'll never forgive herself. Can you smile, Faye? Try.
Oh, Paul, I can't smile. If...
Yes, you can. You can think of the love story of Faye Perkins and Paul Henderson. Always engaged, but never bride or groom. They want to get married, but never do. Why, we have to laugh when we think of Paul Henderson and Faye Perkins.
Oh, it's the funniest thing I ever heard.
Faye...
Well, I guess that's the only hope for us. Let's exercise our sense of humor about this. Basically, I don't find it humorous in the least, but I suppose if you look at it another way, it is pretty funny. All right, come on. Just 1 minute, I'll take my veil off. Will you give me a hand, please, Paul?
Sure. Faye, I'm so very crazy about you.
None of that, Congressman. First, we have to postpone the marriage. Then we can get romantic.
Kiss me. Tell me that someday our day is going to dawn.
Nothing doing. If I kiss you, I'll just start crying again and...
Sure, sure. Sorry. We have to try to keep this on the high and personal plane of comedy. Better bring your bouquet. You can toss it at one of the bridesmaids. Tell her to watch out for the poison ivy in it.
Yeah. Okay, let's go.
Buddy, I'm going to see what it is.
Look at them stare at us. Look at Ma. She's as white as paper.
Start acting, Faye. Start acting.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Fancy meeting you here.
You folks come in to get out of the snowstorm to keep warm?
But say, listen, you two. We've been sitting here practically losing our minds, going through tortures which are...
Tortures? Tortures? Whatever can he mean, Faye?
It's those shoes of his. He only puts them on once a year. They're his party shoes, and they probably pinch his feet.
You can take your shoes off now, Shuffle, and get some relief.
Here now, young people. The folks have been giving me a little background of the events leading up to the,
The tragedy? There isn't any tragedy, Senator.
Well, of course not. It's, comedy.
Comedy?
Faye, Paul, ain't we going back to the house? I've already asked the Reverend if he can spare the extra time. He says yes. Let's not keep him waiting. Let's...
I'm afraid that Mr. Peabody's services won't be needed, Ma.
Oh, Paul.
Dear friends, Faye and I have something to say to you. You've come from several cities to be with us today, and we thank you with all our hearts. Faye and I are still very much in love. Someday we are going to be married. But I'm afraid that circumstances prevent our getting married today. You see, we and
Paul.
The other... Oh, now, Ma, it's nothing to be upset about, is it, Faye? We don't feel upset. In fact,
we find it funny. In all your lives, did you ever hear of such a romance as Paul's and mine? Off again, on again, begin again?
why, Faye and I never really liked this day for our wedding anyhow, did we, honey?
Of course not. It should have been on April 1st.
Oh, Faye.
And we don't want to do it this way. With bad feelings between members of the family. With this church standing empty, save for you few loyal souls. We don't want to get married in an atmosphere of bitterness and dislike. In a few days, I'll run down here for a weekend, and we can see how things stand. And by that time, perhaps Evie and Willie might have changed their minds about us. And you'll feel better, Ma. You won't feel that you...
Are you postponing the wedding on account of me? Oh, I won't stand for that, Paul. Are you postponing your wedding because you think that maybe I might...
Of course not, Ma. My goodness, what gives you that idea? And will all of you kindly stop looking at us with such sad, sorrowful eyes? This is funny. It isn't tragic. Because of matters beyond our control, this little party has turned out to be a flop. It's not our fault. So why should we feel bad? And so Paul's going back to Washington, and I'll get ready for a return engagement to be played at this theater at a later date. And, well, that's all. Everything is all right.
Well, say something, somebody.
Faye. Oh, Faye, Paul.
Sure. Sure, it's funny. Funniest thing I ever heard. Better than a zoo full of monkeys.
Oh, Shuffle. Shuffle, don't. And now, won't all of you come over to the house and join us and all that food that's waiting? And we'll pretend that it's really a nice party, huh?
And Faye wants someone to have her bouquet. You have to throw it from the top of the church steps or from the car, don't you, Faye?
Sure. So come on, girls, let's go. Come on, Ma.
We're all going back to the house. We'll need our coats.
I'll get you your coats.
Please, don't feel bad, Ma. Because, look, did Paul and I act heartbroken? Of course not.
Paul, my boy.
Yes, Senator.
Stop being a bad dramatic actor and tell me what's really behind this. Obviously, the quarrel in the bride's family is responsible. Does your fiancée feel that badly about her sister's absence?
It's that, but... Mostly, it's her mother. Mm. I don't want Faye to leave her this way with things as they are. Most of the people in town not speaking to her. Her own family so bitter. How could I ask Faye to leave home now?
Yeah, that's a very considerate thought. But aren't you being a little too noble, Paul? Making so much of a simple family quarrel?
I know Faye. If we'd been married today and gone away, she'd never stop hating herself. Oh, Faye had tried to be a good wife to me, but her thoughts would be back here with Ma every minute. Well, that isn't the kind of honeymoon I want, Senator. I've waited too long for Faye. And when we're married, I want her to be all mine. Not an empty shell whose spirit is somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you're right at that. Yeah. Unfortunate. Most unfortunate. Terribly embarrassing, too. Well, will you be coming back to Washington tonight?
Tomorrow, I think. Come on, Senator. The wedding feast awaits us.
Wedding feast? Yeah. Yeah. Too bad. Too bad. People never learn, do they? That all we have in life is each other. And all too soon, the dear ones pass. We ought to be nice to each other while there's still time. Too bad. Too bad.
And now, some hours later, our scene is Ma's house. The few faithful friends are still gathered there. Faye and Paul have done their best to cheer up the gloomy gathering and have almost succeeded. But Faye has noticed that one member of the family has slipped away. Faye has set out to look for the absent person. Now we find her upstairs, just ready to knock on the door of Ma's room. Yes, the absent person is Ma. Listen.
Is anybody in there? Anybody here? Ah, there you are, sitting in the dark.
I just came up for a minute.
And what are you doing, Ma? Just sitting, looking out of the window?
Just looking at the snowfall.
Oh. Ma. Ma, please don't feel bad, because I don't. Really and truly, I don't.
Hush, Faye.
It doesn't matter, Ma. And if you think that you're in any way responsible, you're wrong. Because, of course, you're not. And Paul and I know that.
I know it, Faye.
So please, please come down and join the rest of us, Ma. Maybe you think I don't understand your feelings this minute, what's going through your head. You feel as if the whole world collapsed. Willie and Evie, she's not even speaking to you. Evie trying to hurt us as much as she can. Your own child. The wedding of your other daughter called off. You feel as if the one thing you lived for, bringing us kids up and giving us a good home and making us happy and with love for each other, you feel as if that's just gone away, that you've failed. But you haven't, Ma. You've never lost faith in yourself or faith in what you've done before. Evie can't take all that away in one minute, can she? Oh, please, Ma.
Why didn't Paul and you come back to the house and get married like we wanted? At least I'd know that part of it was all right.
But it's all right anyway. We'd rather have it this way. Oh, Ma, all I can think of is an evening just like this about a year ago. It was snowing, and I was lying on my bed crying. Paul and I had had a fight. He was going to marry Cynthia Allen. And you came in, and you talked to me, and told me that all bad things pass away. You told me about the snow, and how the day before I was born it started to snow, and how you lay in your room all that night looking at the snow falling, wondering about this child that you were about to give life to. And as you talked to me, you held my hand. And pretty soon I fell asleep. Remember?
Yes. Yes, I remember, Faye.
And you were so right, Ma. Bad things do pass, and we mustn't feel too bad. The snow will come down another day, and everything will be different. And we'll still be the same.
Maybe I ain't such a failure after all.
Huh? Ma, how can you of all people say you're a failure?
I ain't. Not when this girl here is my daughter. Oh, Faye, Faye. You was born with understanding and with gentleness and with wisdom. But you still ain't got the final understanding. You won't know that till in turn you are the mother of a daughter. Thousand upon thousand little memories, half-hidden glimpses, secret yet revealing ways. Small, helpless, tender things. Big now, but somehow still as tender, still so pitiful, for no good reason. Soft sleeper in the night. Dreamer of dreams that mothers wish for in the night of labor. Oh, child, how can I tell you what you mean to me? That's why I sit alone in the dark and cry a little. For the part of me that's you.
Oh, don't cry, Ma, please.
I'll stop. Since I have your hand on top of mine, and I can't read no hatred in your eyes.
And tomorrow, Faye takes leave of Paul, and Evie and Willie learn what they've done. Listen again tomorrow. You know, when you hear how safe Oxidol is, and how easy it is on washable colors and on hands, well, you might wonder about its whitewashing powers. I mean, if Oxidol will really give you the dazzling white washes you want. Well, listen to this. Oxidol washes clothes as much as 9 to 11 shades whiter than soap after soap we tested it against. As much as 9 to 11 actual tintometer shades whiter than many popular soaps, including maybe the very soap you're using now. Yes, in spite of Oxidol's wonderful safety, its safety for washable colors and for hands, Oxidol gives you one of the whitest washes you've ever laid eyes on. Absolutely. So get Oxidol. Your dealer has it in a bright orange and blue bullseye box with O-X-Y-D-O-L on it. That spells Oxidol, and Oxidol spells dazzling white, safe washes. So Paul and Faye do their best to smile away the tragedy of their wedding day, but Ma feels far from smiling. Never before have we seen Ma quite so unhappy. Yes, Faye means a great deal to her. Well, tomorrow Paul and Faye say goodbye for a while. And once again we turn our attention to those people responsible for the unfortunate ending to Faye's wedding day. Is Evie proud of her handiwork? Be sure to listen again tomorrow. This is Phil Bowman speaking for Dick Wells, speaking for the makers of High Test Oxidol.
At 1590, this is the voice of Cummings Communications Corporation, WLTD, Evanston.
The Green Bumblebee. He hunts the biggest of all game.
Come on, Cato. Let's step through the secret panel in the rear of the closet in our bedroom.
Yes, but Mr. Blitt...
Not now, Cato. Let's move quickly through this narrow passageway built within the walls of our apartment building.
But Mr. Blitt must say...
Never mind, Cato. This passage leads to an adjoining, supposedly abandoned building where we have our sleek, super-powered automobile.
But Mr. Blitt should know
Not
that...
Not now, Cato. We must drive quickly to Northwest Federal Savings to take advantage of a wide variety of savings programs.
But Mr. Blitt...
With interest from 5 to 6% per year, compounded daily and paid quarterly.
But, Mr. Blitt...
Hurry, Cato. Press that special button and a section of the wall will lift automatically.
But, Mr. Blitt, the button...
Never mind, Cato. We've got to hurry to Northwest Federal. I'll press that button myself.
Mr. Blitt, the button not work.
Not work? Don't be silly, Cato. It always works for the green bumblebee. Cato, we're off to Northwest Federal.
But Mr. Blitt, the wall.
At 4901 Irving Park Road.
Mr. Blitt, the wall.
One block west of Cicero.
Mr. Blitt, the wall. Mr. Blitt?
I know, Cato, I know. Just hand me a Northwest Federal save-by-mail envelope, will you?
What you think I am? Faithful valet?
Well, we're back. Bridging the gap from 1941 to 1971. 30 years have gone by since the program, the Ma Perkins program we just heard, was originally broadcast. And you know, that was originally recorded on November 27th of 1940 for broadcast by transcription to a lot of local stations across the country on January 2nd of 1941. The people in our studio right now can't hear it, but all over the Chicagoland area, listeners of Those Were the Days are applauding sincerely for your efforts this afternoon. Gang, I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
Hey, this was good. Listen, I want to ask a couple of questions. Yeah, you got a couple more minutes, haven't you? Huh? Okay. What about this? Do you think there's a place on radio today for original drama?
I do. I believe there's a place on radio day for original drama. I think people are looking for it, are wanting it now. I think that they could bring it back because it's been a wonderful comfort to people who are blind. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been a great comfort to people who are busy doing other things and can listen while they work. I believe there's a place for it.
Johnny? I definitely think there's a place for it. I don't know whether it's insurmountable or not, but radio is a very much overlooked medium. And it's growing all the time, and particularly with the younger people today, they really don't have a tremendous selection. They walk around with their pocket radios on all the time, but what do they listen? It's all music, and I'm not against music. I like music, but something that they could listen to and stimulate their imaginations or create their own pictures is what we used to do in the radio days, and everybody at home had their own picture of what the people looked like. And build up a little. Now it's all laid right out there. Mm-hmm. You know, your brain is all soggy and relaxed, and you look at the idiot tube, and there it is, and no one ever has to know or have it explained to them because it's right there.
Vi?
I had an experience like that last January. I had an enrichment class in drama. So one day I brought a couple of records that I had done. Remember the old Whistler scripts?
Yes, I did.
Grand jury trials.
Sherman Marks.
So I had a part in both of those. So I had recordings of it, and I played it for these young people. They were ages from, I would say 14 to 18. They were absolutely fascinated, and it was interesting to hear them describe what they had seen. I mean, as far as outdoor scenes were concerned, or indoors, and what the people looked like. I asked them what I thought these people looked like, and they started to describe them only from their imaginations, which is great. And I think I think young people need that today, because imaginations will always have imagination, but for masses, for the great bulk, I think imagination has slipped considerably.
Yes, it has.
Well, that's the beauty of it, Vi, because everybody can imagine the character to look like his own idea of the hero or his own idea of the villain. For example, Fibber McGee's closet. It looked different to everybody, yet everybody could describe his own version of McGee's closet.
Well, I don't knock TV. I think TV is a great, great medium, and our young people and old people, too, learn so many things from it, and it's very entertaining. I don't knock that, but we can have both. There's no reason why not. You know,
I think so. Yeah. Phil, what do you think? Want to get involved in doing some new radio today?
As a matter of fact, I'd enjoy it very much. You know, I agree with what they have said about the imagination thing. For example, everybody pictures Rushville Center, which was the locale of the Ma Perkins show, is in a little different way. How many people picture Vic and Sade? I believe that originally was supposed to be Bloomington, Illinois, if I remember rightly.
Right. Yeah.
And everybody has a little different picture of what the people look like, the room looks like, all the rest of it. I think there's definitely a possible future. I don't think any more through the networks. I don't want to insult the networks, but I don't think they have the imaginative capacity to take it anymore, because it's localized except for news. However, packaging, syndicating has become so much greater in the past few years. Some imaginative and good promoting syndicator, I think, could do a fine job. And he could start out with one, and if that works, fine.
I think we have a budding radio actor right in our midst, too. Right. Bob Kennedy.
Oh, tremendous job.
Thank you. What a delight it was
beautiful
working
job
with these
was
artists.
Was this your baptism of fire today?
I had done a little toward the end of what was then radio acting. I had done just a little teeny bit locally, but never anything at all like this. And I said, not only, we were talking earlier, I remember my closest association with genuine network old-time radio soap opera was when I got thrown out of a studio as a kid in New York. I'd go in there on a holiday, and the director would go, it might have been you, Phil. You have that mean man. Folks, if you picture Phil Bowman, now this is as a nice fellow, he's a mean man who threw me out of the studio. No, but I remember
you're
opening this door
here,
and getting thrown out, so it's a great
thing. I threw one fellow out of a studio kid one time, only one bodily, but he was as older than I was, and smaller.
But you know the way,
I couldn't get over the fact that when you spoke in our first rehearsal, your voice timbre was the same as Johnny Hoe, who is now on television, and you sound and look very much like the original Paul Henderson.
That's right.
Tall, handsome, debonair, of the right shirt.
And it's amazing what a kid 17 can do, you know?
This is a great, because I think it was a marvelous art form, and I listen to your show regularly and enjoy it so much. Have a couple of little daughters at home who listen and enjoy. So these are the young kids coming up. I'd like to see the classics on. Much as TTW brought back a series on television where people actually, in effect, read a book by watching television, mm-hmm, for the delight of reading a book while you're driving along, listening to radio. A group would get together, say, in Chicago, and reproduce some of the great classics and do them on radio, how well they could be done.
You know, I was digging dandelions when you had Fred Allen on there.
Uh-huh.
Believe me, I dug more dandelions than I'd ever done.
Well, Fred Allen has often come up with some dandelions.
Oh!
You see? Okay, I want to thank Rita Ascott-Boyd, Viola Berwick, who, incidentally, we didn't mention, but Vi is the director of drama at St. Scholastica High School, and so she was directing students all week, and she came and was directed herself this afternoon. Thanks very much. And Johnny Coons, Bob Kennedy, and Phil Bowman, thanks very much for sharing part of your afternoon with us on Those Were the Days. This is Chuck Shaden. You're tuned to WLTD in Evanston. We're going to be here right on up until 4 o'clock this afternoon. We've got some great good old sounds coming ahead. And as a matter of fact, right now, a great tale of mystery and terror by radio's masters of the macabre. Murder at Midnight. Here's Mercedes McCambridge starring in The Man with the Black Beard.
Murder at Midnight.